Well, good morning. You're tuned into Radio Zine here on Cable Community Radio. I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Today, for a special spring drive edition of Radio Zine, I'll be talking to two Oregon-based organizations that are both aiming to bring a bit of the backcountry to urban dwellers or the outdoors to the city. In the second half of our show this morning, I'll be having a discussion with Gwen Trice, Executive Director of the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center in Eastern Oregon. But first up in our first half of Radio Zane, I'll be talking to Urban Nature Partners, and they're here in studio to talk about their mentoring program that aims to bring the outdoors to youth from underserved communities. Here in studio right now is Kristen Bowling. Welcome to Radio Zane.
Thanks very much for having us.
So first of all, can we just give us a little overview of your organization for people who haven't heard maybe of you guys before? What is Urban Nature Partners?
Sure. We're a tiny grassroots nonprofit that's about 5 years old. And we match young people starting in fourth grade with a mentor that takes them outdoors on a regular basis into urban green spaces. And we do family-inclusive group outings around the greater Portland area, get kids camp scholarships in the summer, and opportunities to go into leadership programs when they become teens. So we're a multi-tiered opportunity for kids that might not be able to enjoy the great urban green spaces that we have here around Portland.
Should mention that our other guests just managed to rush in the door and join us. Good morning, Dasha. How are you doing? Also from Urban Nature Partners.
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
So one of the highlights of your organization, or the focus of your organization, is this mentee program that you have where you're taking youth outdoors, and that is a very broad kind of definition, I guess. So people are going anywhere from being in parks to, you mentioned, people going maybe up to like Alaska. So can you let us know what is this mentoring program? What does that look like?
Right. When I founded this program 5 years ago, I saw that a lot of organizations do outdoor programming really well. There's a lot of great curriculum-based programs doing things in and out of classrooms. There's an opportunity to go to outdoor school, which is a really superlative opportunity that all kids in Oregon get. But what seemed to be missing was a long-term relationship-based programming for young people that allows them to go and experience things on their own. So some young people, when they come to us at 9 years old, may want to play on a playground in the neighborhood park just down the block. Awesome. Some people, some of those youth, when they get older, may want to go, you know, hike Dog Mountain in the gorge with their mentor all day Saturday. That's a great choice to make as well. So we wanted to not only be able to give kids a choice of what they do and what they experience, and to explore things on their own terms that can be more relevant to their family background or their cultural upbringing as well than maybe an environmental education curriculum. But cognitive science also tells us that having experiences alongside someone with whom you have a positive relationship builds all kinds of really awesome connections in your brain that can last your lifetime. So having it be relationship-based is a really integral part of our program. So they get to have these experiences alongside their mentor for years on end, and that's really powerful.
Yeah, I know you guys are starting your next cohort that will be coming up. And in your information sheet that's about if you want to become a mentor, I was really surprised when I was first learning about it to see that it's not one of these kind of mentoring programs where you can go visit somebody on the weekend and then you're done. It's actually quite a commitment, what you're talking about. It's multiple years. If possible, if you can be involved between 2 and 4 years. So it's really, as you're saying, building relationships, these very long relationships. And so you are, starting with a kid who's 10 and you could take them all the way into their teenage years.
Absolutely. We have some youth that have been with us from the beginning. So they started at 10 and they're now 15, transitioning into teen leadership programs from being with us. So, it's a really big volunteer ask. We realize that's part of the model. So we do go outside all year. We make sure that kids have rain gear and warm winter clothing to be able to be outside all year long, because it's the Northwest. That's what we have to do, right? it's that regularity of being outside with your mentor and on our group outings all year, and just building that up.
So who is your typical mentor? Who signs up for it?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, since it's such a big ask, obviously folks need to have a little bit of extra time. They need to have some relative stability in their lives and personally and professionally, knowing that they'll be living in the Portland area for the foreseeable future. We don't want a mentor to have to move away after they've spent a lot of time investing in that relationship. And same thing for youth. You know, we look for families that maybe are from Portland, have been here a while, and want to stay. So that we can build on that relationship. We often get folks that are maybe don't want to have their own kids, already have their kids out of the house, or haven't had them yet, right? So we get, you know, maybe typical folks in their early 30s that are like, I really want to be around youth. Let's do this. Or I've had some experience with nieces and nephews or students and folks like that and want to have a deeper relationship that way. So that commitment to your mentee is the most important relationship with a child in their life.
And so if somebody wanted to become a mentor, do they need a specific background in being in the outdoors?
Sure.
I mean, because if outdoors is going to the playground, is that enough?
Yeah,
or do you need
right.
someone to say, well, I climbed Everest? What
yeah,
is, what
sometimes
is
people think they need to be a biologist to sign up. That's not the point at all. Nope. Actually, sometimes folks that don't feel as educated on all of the specifics of plants and animals. Sometimes that's better because you get to learn alongside your kid.
Mm.
Of course, we want folks to be comfortable being out there in order to teach that comfort and keep a kid safe while they're there. We also are looking, though, for folks that do have some experience with young people and have either some direct experience or a lot of knowledge about social and environmental justice issues. We often will have a match that's from a different race or cultural background between our adults and our kid, which can be pretty powerful, but we want to make sure that everybody's coming to the table understanding what some of the issues that they might face would be.
That's really interesting, just because it's, you know, it is such an issue that we have here in the United States, well, around the world generally, about outdoors and who has access to outdoors, and an important part of those discussions, especially for kids who maybe don't have maybe the opportunity to always go outside, or families who have gone outside, and so being given the chance to understand why they maybe haven't been outside, or why it is the way it is. That's such an important and powerful discussion to have with young people.
Yeah, absolutely. When I moved, I was a national park ranger living in really remote areas for 15 years. And I moved to Portland thinking, I'll get my master's degree and then I'm going to want to live because I'm not a city person, right? And I love living in Portland because there's access to great urban green spaces and water, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that I love it here, I started asking myself, why am I not seeing more young people and more folks of color out there? Why isn't everybody who lives in Portland out here? And the barriers are pretty small, right? Not everybody has a raincoat.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody knows where to go or what to do,
mm-hmm.
knows that they would feel welcome when they get there. And for kids, not everybody has an adult with the time to take them. So
that relationship.
Gosh, those are really easy barriers. We'll give them a raincoat, a map, a mentor, and invite their family to come along. So that's what we do.
So, you know, all of these things are not free. I assume that, you know, they have some kind of cost to them. For the mentees, though, is this something that they have to pay for, or is this free for mentors? What does that look like for people who want to participate?
No cost at all to mentees and their families. Yeah, down to the raincoat and the boots, which they outgrow every year and we replace. Yeah.
Well, you're a pretty relatively young organization. Mm-hmm. And here we have Dasha, who is part of your funding team. And I just have a question about what does that look like for such a young organization? How is it that you guys are staying afloat?
Good question, definitely. My work for Urban Nature Partners is to make the connections between Urban Nature Partners, supporters, donors, sponsors, and the org's work. And it's been an ongoing joy for my team to make those connections. So we are, first of all, I want to mention that we are opening our hearts and arms to our supporters on Friday at the event that we're holding. It's called Spring Opener, and it will be at Cider Riot. It's one of the ways to support us, to come and learn about our mission, work, our people who are doing it, and to either engage by learning how to become a mentor, a volunteer, or supporting us financially. Also, it's just going to be a lot of great fun. And CiderRad, we definitely want to have a special line of thank you to them because they have been an amazing sponsor, one of those supporters in the community who have sponsored the space for us to use with all of the amenities and accommodations that we could have wished for. So thank you, Brianne and Alex and the team for making it happen.
So we are in the middle of our spring drive, and it's time for us to go check in on Pledge Central with Ray and Dan to see how it's going over there. Ray and Dan, how's it going?
Hello, Jenna.
Hello, Jenna.
We're doing great over here. And, you know, it's a wonderful program you've got going, the Urban Nature Partners, serving underserved communities. I like the way that sounds, serving the underserved. You know, it's important that this story gets out, and this is one of the reasons why KBOO is so important. So take this opportunity, give us a call, 877-500-5266, and make your commitment to become a member today. Shows like this are important, and we need your support to continue to bring this local community-based news to you on a regular basis. So call us at 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and click on that donate button.
Yes, it's important to remember the outdoors world. As Portland gets more and more urban, we need to stay in contact with the trees and the streams. And when you're out doing that, when you're out in the woods, you need to stay warm. And one way to stay warm would be in our beautiful KBOO two-sided hoodie, which can be yours for a pledge of only $300 or $25 a month. It comes in all kinds of sizes. It's reversible, so you can change your mood depending which way the wind's blowing and bring the nature of KBOO into the world, natural and urban both. That's 877-500-5266. Call now.
Dan, you're right. It is an attractive garment. And not only will it keep you warm during the cooler spring weather and the cooler fall weather, but it will also demonstrate your commitment to your community radio station. So again, 877-500-5266. We have a show goal of $300 during this Radio Zine broadcast, and you can help us achieve that goal by picking up the phone and showing your support for these folks who commit their time and energy to the underserved youth of Portland to get them out and get them into green spaces and also create mentors for the next generation of naturalists, if you will. So call 877-500-5266. Make that commitment. $25 a month will get you the KBOO hoodie, a bold fashion statement in any environment, but certainly a great way to show your support. You can also go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. Or if you have the KBOO app, go to the app and click on that bright red donate button. But whatever way you choose to do it, take this opportunity and make your commitment and show your support for your community radio station.
And just as the hoodie can keep you warm, KBOO keeps your mind warm, keeps your mind cooking, gives your heart some hope in these dark times. We're not fake news. We're about the realest news you can get because we're not beholden to anyone but you, our members. You help us control what goes out on the air. We respond to your desires and your wishes and find more information for you. The theme of our spring pledge break, as you see, is to fight fascism. And what better way to fight fascism than with information and by going out in nature, the real world? Nature has no room for fascism. Everybody's equal in the eyes of nature. Everyone has potential, and we're here to help you with that potential, give you the information you need in these incredibly darkening times. Please call 877-500-5266. And we have other prizes, other programs available for you. If you can only afford $10 a month, fine. If you're already a member and just want to up how much you're paying from 10 to 20, that's great too. If you just want to make a one-time donation, please, you know, call us, 877-500-5266. We've also occasionally had people just drop by and bring us checks or cash. That's fine too. We're here on 8th Avenue.
Dan, we have some people to thank. We have Joseph from Hillsboro, who's become a new member. We have Desiree from Northeast Portland who's renewing. We have Jill from Portland who's renewing. And we have Michelle from Northwest Portland who's also renewing. We want to thank you and urge other listeners who haven't had the opportunity yet to take the time. Our volunteers are standing by. It's a quick two-minute phone call. You can pick up the phone, 877-500-5266. A friendly voice will walk you through the quick process. Just a credit card will get you going. So again, before we go back to Radio Zine and Jenna and our delightful guests, please take this opportunity, call 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Dan and Ray. Well, if you're just tuning us, you're listening to Radio Zine, and I am talking to Urban Nature Partners, whose mission is, well, I'll just read it to you. Urban Nature Partners PDX empowers youth from historically underserved Portland neighborhoods through long-term one-on-one mentoring relationships and access to meaningful outdoor experiences.
Meaningful outdoor experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was reading your mission, and I was wondering about that because it's in italics. If you go onto your website, that word meaningful is in italics.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what, because you founded this organization, mm-hmm. what in your own background said, hey, other people need to have meaningful outdoor experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's different for every young person. And it's different for every adult, right? Nature gives back to you what you're looking for. You know, when I was the age of our youth, 12 and 13, my parents were going through a divorce, and I put on my little Sony Walkman, the waterproof yellow one with the Cure tape on it, right?
Oh,
and I walked in the woods.
Good.
I had a park close by, and I just walked and walked and walked until that stress went away in the woods. And so I have, you know, personal experience at this age of the impact that nature can have, right? So taking that physical and mental stress away from things that may be challenging in their lives, doing a personal challenge like a difficult hike or a new activity that gives them more self-confidence, and doing that alongside a mentor who's encouraging is really cool. Or some kids really get into learning a lot about plants or bugs or birds or taking photographs or making nature art, right? So whatever is meaningful to them, whatever speaks to them, and whatever they need, they can get from that relationship, not only with their mentor, but with nature and with some of the same places that they go back to over and over again. So the meaning is there for everybody.
So you've been, as you said, we're going into cohort 7. If you were to become a mentor for this year, you'd be entering cohort 7. So you've obviously had years now of people going through your mentor-mentee program. What kind of feedback have you gotten from the people who have participated?
Mentors or families or both?
Oh, all of the above.
Yeah. I think the fact that us being family inclusive on our group outings and even the pair outings, you know, families and even kids from the neighborhood get interested in coming along. We've had.
So your outings aren't limited to just that pair.
Correct,
you can have,
yeah.
You can invite people from the mentee's family?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
We want that to happen because we don't want to be a program where a mentor plucks one kid out of the family, does something cool, and then drops them back in, right? So that's an experience that's out of context with the rest of their life. Bringing along family members allows that experience to be shared in these enlarging circles, right? So that it gets more meaning for them. And I think one of the best testimonies for the success is that we have families that ask for their younger siblings to have their own mentor when they get to fourth grade. Some of them, 3 kids in a row.
Wow.
So, yeah, that I'm honored that the program has worked well enough for families to ask for that. That's really cool. Yeah.
Wow. So you can have outings that have quite a few people.
Absolutely.
And everybody building these relationships. So you don't just have this pair building the relationship. Mm-hmm. You actually have the mentor building a relationship with an entire group of people who are supporting this one mentee.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we try to embed our relationship with this young person in all the other relationships in their life, right? With school that's going to take them to outdoor school, with the teacher that maybe recommended them for the program in the first place, with their neighbors, with their extended family. And, you know, on a group outing, we could have Dasha's young kid along with us.
Right.
And then... Yeah.
We love tagging along and observing to continue getting inspired. Yeah, it's
Sasha's love closer to the ground, so she finds more bugs and stuff that we don't see as adults. And then we'll have teenage siblings with us as well, some of whom have become nature day camp counselors and are working with kids like Sasha. So we're crowdsourcing the outdoor knowledge when we're going out together. It's really cool.
What is the size of your organization? Like, how many kids are you guys managing right now? How many mentors are involved?
Yeah, we've got 18 youth right now, and we've served a total of 40 over the first 5 years. So that doesn't seem like very big numbers, but we like to see that we're narrow and deep because we're giving those kids and their families and their neighbors all of those experiences over a long period of time. And those concentric circles of influence are also really important, right? So people are like, gosh, why don't you serve more kids? And we're like, we're serving these kids in a meaningful way. And those circles are going out from there to the people that they know, right? And also, since we're working in a network of partners that are already guiding outdoor experiences or providing summer camps or providing teen programming. And really, we wouldn't exist without being able to leverage all of the other services that are already there. So we're super thankful to those partners. We've just signed up 18 youth, all 18 that we currently have, for a week of summer camp or a teen leadership summer activity. So, and almost all of that is completely covered by scholarships put up by our partners. So incredibly thankful to those folks that help with that. But it's also really great to be able to be in relationship with those partners, most of whom have been since the early years of our organization. So together, in that relationship, we can learn how to serve lower income kids, immigrant kids, kids from different racial backgrounds better, rather than sticking to an environmental ed curriculum that may be more prescribed, that may better serve white middle class kids. We help as a group our partners to be able to become more inclusive. And that's really the heart of what we're doing, is to make the outdoors for everyone.
What would you say is one of the things that you are, I don't want to say like lacking, but like you wish you had more? Maybe it's a funding question, or, all organizations
money,
wish
money, money.
More of, but is it lacking in people? Where are areas you hope to be growing as an organization?
Yeah, we're always wanting to have more adults of color be able to mentor our kids so that they have a mentor that looks like them. We realize that that's a really big ask, right? A lot of folks like yourself who spend time outdoors feel like they're stretched kind of thin, and it's a huge ask to take a kid with you. So we are indeed always looking for adults that come from the same racial cultural backgrounds as our kids. But we do recognize that the cross-cultural, cross-racial experience that those pairs have together, if they're not from the same background, is also a really powerful thing. It allows us to be able to see things through another person's eyes and to interrupt discrimination when it's happening outdoors, because that certainly does happen. So that's powerful as well.
Yes, and something that we are trying to implement in the future is to support the diverse mentors if we do engage them in this work that might take them away from their commitments and opportunities where they could be working. And we want to try to provide stipends to diverse mentors to make it easier for them to make this kind of type of commitment. So this is what we are also, one of our fundraising goals to be able to raise funds to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, funding is such a huge barrier for people just wanting to participate. Yeah, the outdoors is definitely not free.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There are plenty of places to go that are free, but you need the rain gear and that kind of stuff.
And just the time to be able to go out.
The time to get there, for sure.
The gas money to get out there.
If it's not accessible by public transportation, you do have to have a vehicle, we do actually have mentors that don't have vehicles that use bicycle, foot, or mass transport with their kids. And then when we're going a little bit farther, they carpool with other mentor pairs. So it's totally doable. And that's actually a great great example to be setting for environmentally, obviously, and to make it more accessible for maybe families that don't have cars to be able to see how many places you can go without a car.
We're almost running out of time, so I want to make sure that our listeners who maybe want to get involved and want to learn more about either mentoring or how they can support your organization, where can they learn more about you?
So first of all, Kristen, the founder and the director, she's always accessible. So she can be on our website, urbannaturepartners.org. You can find the contacts for their org, our new address, and her contacts. Please just contact her if you have any questions whatsoever. But also a great opportunity to meet us is this Friday, 4:30 till 7 p.m. at Cider Riot. We'll be out there just waiting for anybody and make sure that no answers go unanswered. No questions go unanswered. And so we'll be out there. Whether you're interested in mentoring, volunteering in this cause, in the work of your local nonprofit, please do come out and find out more.
So we've been talking about the mentors, and we just got a little bit here, but I just want to make sure that people understand that they can get involved without being a mentor or mentee. Maybe they can't do that type of commitment, but you are looking for volunteers for other roles in your organization?
Sure. We have a working board. We have a very hardworking board and an advisory committee. Folks have connections with community businesses and other outdoor-oriented partners. We're always looking for new connections there to leverage. So, yeah, come build a relationship with us, and there are lots of ways to help rather than opening your pocketbook. That part is good as well, but yeah, we're a relationship, community-based grassroots organization just like KBOO, so we'd love to get to know you as well.
Yeah. And that means volunteers. We love the volunteers.
That's right.
Well, we're just out of time here. I really want to thank you both for coming in today, Kristen and Dasha from the Urban Nature Partners. You can find more about them at www.urban-nature-partners.org. You can also find them on the socials at Urban Nature Partners PDX. Find out all about what they do outdoors, whether that's in Alaska or here in Portland. Hope you stay tuned, because up next we have an interview with Gwen Trice from the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center. But first, we're going to go over to Ray and Dan over there in Pledge Center. Thank you so much again to Chris and Dasha for coming in today.
Thanks so much for having
us.
Good morning, Portland. This is Dan and Ray at the KBOO Pledge Central. It's our quarterly pledge break, this time for spring. Spring is busting out all over. You just heard about programs to get kids more out into nature, and this is the great time to do it. And you wouldn't know about this program if it wasn't for KBOO. KBOO provides you many programming information that you're not going to get anywhere else. And to keep that information coming, we need your help. We need your donations. So please call 877-500-5266. You can go online at KBOOFM. But everybody's got a phone, 877-500-5266. You can pledge whatever you can afford. For example, if you can afford $25 a month or a $300 once a year pledge, you can get our for free, well, not free because you're paying less money, but the KBOO two-sided hoodie, a fashion statement, keep you warm, because you know it may be April, but it's not summer yet. And but we want to keep the sunshine going in these times of darkness. KBOOFM, 877-500-5266.
And Dan, we already have somebody to thank during this session, during this break. Thank you, Marie. Marie from West Richland, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we're urging others to join Marie and take this opportunity, pick up the phone, and show your support for community-based programming like Radio Zine. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. And in case you haven't heard it too many times already, I'm going to repeat that, 877-500-5266. And take this opportunity to show your support and help KBOO to continue to bring these shows to you. We've been doing it for 50 years, coming up on 51, actually. We want to do it for 50 more, and with your help, we can. So by calling us at 877 500 5266 or going online at kbo.fm. You will help us continue to get this important community-based news to you. For a commitment of $10 a month, we'd like to thank you with any number of gifts. Quite a few of them are attire, where you can demonstrate your support to your friends and your neighbors in your community that you are part of the KBOO membership. So please give us a call, 877-500-5266, or if you have your cell phone, you can go to the KBOO app. And if you haven't downloaded it already, you should, because it's a great app. But you can go to the KBOO app and click on that donate button. But however you choose to do it, now's the time. Please help us continue to bring this local, community-based, non-commercial programming to you uninterrupted week after week.
And when we say local and community, we don't just mean Portland. We have translators to send our signal in various parts of the state. We're, of course, available online, either live or all programs are archived that you can listen to at other times. So the community we are going for is a community of activists, a community that wants to do something about the world, a community of people who get depressed hearing too much news. Well, here we have news that informs, that gives you hope, that can give you some inspiration. And unfortunately, we have bills, and we pay for some programs that are produced otherwise. It takes a lot of electricity to broadcast your signal across Northwest Oregon, Southwest Washington. So please call for Make a Donation, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266, online at KBOO FM. And we got more coming. As I said, expanding our community. We had a donor from West Richland, one of the next voices you'll hear on the radio is from a place in Joseph in Northeast Oregon.
You know, Dan, you mentioned the programming here. Over 7,500 hours a year of programming is locally produced here at KBOO. It's a volunteer-driven station. Members come in and produce this programming. In fact, I'm looking around at a group of faces, all of whom are volunteers committed to the continuation of community radio. So call 877-500-5266 and become a member of the community. And if you are a member now, take this opportunity to think about upgrading your membership. Just $5 a month more on your credit card, you'll hardly notice, maybe one less latte. But that all goes to make sure that we can continue to keep the lights on, keep the antenna fired up, and keep this message getting to you. So call 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. But whichever way you choose to donate, please do it now. Help us make our goal of $300 for this show hour. And we've only got 1 minute left in this pitch break, so please take this opportunity, pick up the phone, call 877-500-5266.
Yes, please call, because there's a lot more to KBOO than what you hear on the air. I don't know how many hours people donate producing programs, helping the station run our new archiving program. So please, 877-500-5266. We know these pledge breaks can be a little irritating, but we need them. We need you. Become part of the community, 877-500-5266.
The Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center has been hosting a series of interactive events at the World Forestry Center that examines the issues of race and social justice through the lens of Oregon's history, through sharing and discussion of the history of the segregated logging community of Maxville, Oregon, in Eastern Oregon. Here to talk to me today about the series is Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center's Executive Director, Gwen Trice. Thanks for joining me today, Gwen.
Hi, Jenna. Thanks so much for having me.
So first, what is happening in these series of events at the World Forestry Center?
We're really excited to be a part of the World Forestry Center's Discovery Museum. We're on the second floor. Our exhibit shows 20 images that have real impact in showing the connection of people together in Maxville. And so they're really, when that town first started. It started in 1923, and it really went to around 1933 before it was dismantled. However, a lot of the African-American people, including my father and grandfather that came here, they actually settled in the area of Eastern Oregon. So I grew up in that space. So these photos show images of some of the African-American folks and their white friends and some of the people that worked there and the buildings when they looked new and some of the tasks they did. And we're just taking those images and some of the captions about it, and we're really going into the discussion about foods and about the jobs that people had and the adversarial things that would come up. For instance, during that time, the Ku Klux Klan was very prevalent in Oregon, and the rural landscape was not different. And so we get an opportunity each second Saturday to talk with and interface with adults as well as young people and small children that come in to do craft work and to bring it up at different levels and to stimulate thoughtful conversation and contemplation in that space. And also The Logger's Daughter, that's an Oregon Public Broadcasting Oregon experience that was done early on. That's also an opportunity to sit and watch that video too, to learn more about the beginnings of our work.
Because these series are happening, as you just mentioned, they're happening every second Saturday, and they started back in January.
Yes.
And they're going all the way through June.
Exactly.
And so these events that we're talking about actually go from morning till evening. It's from 10 a.m. to 5. So it seems like it's quite a day of exploring this issue.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's for people who don't maybe know here, our Portland listeners, where Maxville is, it's way out in eastern Oregon, all the way out by the Willowas. I mean, it's
the Willowa Mountains,
yeah,
and it's really in the center of one of the seven wonders of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And so Willowa Lake, and we're in downtown Joseph, right, just right in the center of downtown Joseph as well. So it's Nez Perce country if you're mm-hmm. looking at who was there before all of us came yeah. and were a part of the landscape. And it's just a great opportunity to meet people from all over the world that come there. But part of our mission is really to talk about Oregon logging communities historically and all the people that were represented in those spaces. So not just African-American groups were there. There were Filipino and there were Greek loggers and Japanese and Chinese. And of course, not to mention Native American logging. Our goal is to really overall tell this inclusive story of the logging industry historically around Oregon and the Pacific Northwest and how it ties nationally.
Can we talk a little bit about that history, right? So, you know, it's something we often talk about with Oregon history is how often it is very whitewashed, and that
yes.
any sort of people who are outside of that majority or their stories are erased. And when we think of logging, we tend to think of it as this
Paul Bunyan.
Yeah, but Paul Bunyan. But when we really look at the history, as in all aspects of our history,
right.
it's actually there's so many voices that are being left out of that conversation.
Yes.
So when we're talking about the history of Eastern Oregon and logging, what would surprise people to learn that maybe they don't think of when they think of Oregon's history over there?
Well, truly, the first thing is African American loggers. It's when we hear about that. When I heard about it the first time, it was 2003. I didn't know my father was a logger when he first came out. So he was 19 in 1923.
Wow, so you even had someone directly in your own family you were unaware
Absolutely.
Of
my dad, my grandfather, and a lot of our family members came. They were recruited, like so many other African-American loggers from the South and the Midwest in 1923. They were brought out to Oregon. And so my father and grandfather traveled in a boxcar out to Oregon and ended up in this little tiny place. And as experienced loggers, they really wanted, that was really part of it for me. It drove it home as they recruited experienced loggers that could move millions of board feet of timber out of that area. And they really I think they really just, they went throughout those areas and recruited and handpicked these gentlemen, and then their families came. That was something that was fairly new, is not to have just an all-male logging camp, but they had families and kids there. And they, of course, it was segregated, and it was deeply segregated in that, you know, there were, the blacks lived on one side, the whites lived on the other. But if you were a single white male, you were also housed separately and ate in a different space as well. And so that's sort of a, this, the attitude. First of all, the timber company was from the South, so that was their social norm, and they weren't going to do that differently. But it was also industry-wide. It was this thought as a way to be more efficient, is to keep all ethnic groups separately, no matter what they were, and keep, and their jobs were different. But people have a way of working together and connecting, and they also must, it's more of man against nature. You have to watch for each other and take care of each other in those spaces, because it, you know, you could lose your life, and it happened.
So if we were to travel back to Maxville, say, you know, nearly 100 years ago, what would that community look like?
I ask myself that all the time when I interview the elders of every quarter. And Vernonia was another logging town that had a black quarter, a Filipino quarter, and a Japanese quarter. And I was having a conversation with now passed away, the great Linda Hornbuckle. And she's considered the soul diva of the Portland area. She's a beautiful singer. And we were working on a play with Marv Ross. And she looked at me and she goes, "Who are you? I just wonder," because her family came out of Vernonia. And so to be able to it's all about make having those conversations to really come up with how can you imagine it would have been for those, first of all, the men to come in boxcars all that way? Because you know every time they stopped, they couldn't get off. And how did they eat, and what did they do? Did they play music and play cards and commiserate with one another and make plans for their families? And what was it like during 4th of July? And I've had many accounts of 4th of July that everyone came together and played music and heard stories about what was going on in the outside world, like when the Charleston came about and the little, this young black girl was moving her knees and her hands back and forth so quickly. One of the women exclaimed, "I just couldn't believe it when I saw her, how fast her legs were moving." And it was such an anomaly, you know, from the fiddle music and the mandolins that were playing. And so this whole sense of roots music was being formed between groups of people. And they all still, they didn't have a church at Maxville, but they still had people that were considered their religious leaders in those spaces. And so that they, that the women would come together too, that not maybe every one of them, but a lot of those images that we've been able to see of the women and the children from both groups coming together and finding time, spending time together, because everyone worked. So all the kids had their jobs. They'd take out their rifles and go squirrel hunting and gather berries and mushrooms or whatever they would bring home to, you know, help feed the family, and hauling water to wash clothes and to cook with and to drink. And that's down the lane. And then the outhouses, and then the 5.5 feet of snow in the wintertime. And so keeping those paths, you know, clear so you can get to the water source, so you can get to your neighbors. And the whole idea, too, of the solitude when the men were out working, and maybe they would be gone for 2 days. And the women had to, I would think, make those connections with each other. Because, again, if something went awry, or if you were going to have a child, and there were many children lost because the access to medicine, and there was 1 to 2 doctors that served, but maybe not always the medicine was there. So there were many things that people had to do to survive. And a lot of the African-American men, and possibly the other men as well, when they died, they wanted to be their bodies to be shipped back home. So to wrap them up and putting the buckets of hot sand on the vehicle and hot bricks and covers, because it took a long time to get down to the main town to get them on the train, to get them out. And so there were times that it was necessary to set aside the social norm to take care of the community. And that's those pieces that I feel, although there was that separateness inside. And of course, once the town was dismantled and the Southern Company took their holdings and left, a lot of the African-American folks stayed in that space. And the schools became one school instead of separate schools. And so a lot of the homesteaders, they came from a different outlook. And some of them came from West Virginia. Some of them came from the coal mines. And so there were similar circumstances where you had company stores and your lives were fashioned by that company that were set aside too. And people had friendships in those spaces as well. I'm not saying everything was easy and it's not a Pollyanna vision, but underneath the hard living and no refrigeration and kerosene lamps and no insulation in your homes, there were times that people played baseball. They had two baseball teams there, a black and a white team. And then other times they'd come together and play other towns around that region, and they'd make a super team. So there were times that they were set up to have connection with each other, and that was created by the company as well. So it's, even though there's a separateness, there's also a method and a way to allow them to connect with each other. And I think that that really tells something of the people that were there.
You're listening to Radio Zine, and we're going to go over now to Ray and Dan over in Pledge Central to see how it's going on over there. How's it going?
Jenna, it's going well over here. And you know, it's interesting. If you live in southern or southwest Washington or northwest Oregon, it's easy to think that this is somewhat the center of the universe. But shows like Radio Zine and bringing us the information about the Maxwell Interpretive Center really remind us that it is a gigantic, diverse state and that KABU is committed to covering all of it. This is your chance. Show your commitment to that coverage and give us a call at 877-500-5266 and go and make a donation now. We're suggesting that $10 a month, easily charged to your credit card, is hardly noticeable for many folks, and it will also give you an opportunity for us to say thank you with one of our many nice thank you gifts here at KABU. So please pick up the phone, call 877-500-5266, and make that pledge. Become a member today.
George Orwell had written that whoever controls the past controls the future, and here at KABU, we're bringing you facts from the past. I never knew about this place of Maxville. People don't think too much of racial issues or segregation here in Oregon, but it exists. It exists now. And here at KABU, we're giving voice to anyone who wants it. We are the most diverse station you'll ever hear on local airways or even on your computer, and we need your help. 877-500-5266. As Ray was saying, even a donation as small as $10 a month will keep you tuned in, will keep us rolling, because it helps us to have this constant monthly cash flow. If you want to come by and just send a check for $50 or $100 in one lump, well, we're not going to turn that down either.
And Dan, you make a good point. If you want to just come by, we'd love to have you stop in person. We'll share what's left of our breakfast with you, give you a tour of the palatial facilities here at 20 Southeast 8th. But the main thing, as Dan says, is get involved. Please become a member. This is your opportunity to show your support for your local radio station. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm, or on your cell phone app at the KABU app and hit donate, or in person. But however you choose to do it, take this opportunity and become a member or if you can, increase your membership. And when you speak to one of our cheerful volunteers here in that short conversation, they'll be happy to walk you through the variety of thank you gifts that we'd be happy to provide you with for your monthly donation. So again, 877-500-5266. Please call now.
And, I mean, we're asking for cash donations, but besides money, the other thing that helps KABU keep rolling is volunteers. We offer all kinds of training in radio production, board operation. You can put together a program or podcast with the help of KABU. We have our volunteers for the pledge breaks. You know, people help generate the programs, and money helps pay for the programs. 877-500-5266. Again, we have hundreds of volunteers. We produce 7,500 hours of original programming. Wow, I mean, you could just listen to KABU 24 hours, and it might not be good for your health, but you'd really find out a lot. 877-500-5266.
We'd like to think it would be good for your health, and that's why we're urging you to pick up the phone and call us now. 877-500-5266. We promise to be good for your health. And
mental health particularly.
And as Dan pointed out, you know, this is a station volunteers. If I go back 4 years ago, the only thing I knew about radio was that I could turn it on and listen. Now, as a volunteer, I've had an opportunity to learn, to become involved, and be part of the exciting KBOO community. We know that there are many folks out there who would like to, but their life right now may be preoccupied or focused on other things. But even if you can't volunteer, the one thing you can do is show your support with a membership. So please give a call. You heard that phone ringing in the background. We'd like to have it ring a little bit more. 877-500-5266. Or online, if you're at your computer, you're at work, and you can't pick up the phone, go online, kboo.fm, and click on that donate button at the top corner and become a member. But this is your chance, this is your time, and we need your help. So please get involved with your community radio station, 877-500-5266.
I think that's 877-500-5266. 877, you know the number by now. Pick up the phone, give us a call. Heck, even if you just want to say how much you appreciate the programs and can't afford to make any donation, we just like hearing from you, because the reason KABU exists is because of the listeners. I mean, if you weren't out there in the community, you wouldn't need us. So 877-500-5266, necessary radio for dark times.
Let's talk about bringing people together. If we were to come to one of your events on the second Saturday there at the World Forestry Center, what would a typical day look like for your average attendee?
It changes every time. It's been so fun. There's a lot of young children that come in, and so they get to create possibly a name tag or do an etching of something that we've set out. We've got some wonderful, we try to do something different every time, so it's hands-on. And we have a lot of our support staff, sometimes our board members show up from different places because they're represented from not only the state but other parts of the Pacific Northwest, and as far as Washington, D.C., we have board members all over. And so you get to have different interactions depending on if you have kids with you. It's a different story than if someone's coming in that's an adult and they want to have those conversations. Then we have created specific cards that are laminated of people and their experiences in this space that have completely different perspectives of their experience. And we just try to bring in ways of prompting conversation or being available to ask specific questions. For the most part, a lot of people, it's just their first time, and they need to sit with the logger's daughter and look at the beginning of our discovery, my discovery, and then hear some of those old timers in that area or the elders in all of those communities talk about their life back then. And you'll hear that a lot of the African American people say, "It is no place for pleasure." It was hard work. It was tough. And some that just says it was just difficult. Some of the women to just say it was hard living. They could only be there a year, and they'd have to come out. And of course, their husbands would stay, but they'd move down to town or out to La Grande, and that's what my grandmother did. And there were a lot of the family members. And some of those family members reside here in Portland, so I want to give a shout-out to those descendants of Maxville that live here in Portland in the Pacific Northwest.
Are there any stories that you've heard that really surprised you?
Well, we've been working on a project with the Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble called Maxville to Vanport, and they've been doing performances all over the state. And in talking and interviewing my mom, who's now 92, living in the house I grew up in, she talked about a lot of the people from Vanport that actually left that before the flood and moved to La Grande. Ministers and their wives and some of the other folks, they ended up leaving the city for that rural life. And at that time, there was an African-American church called the Boyd Memorial Baptist Church, Southern Baptist, and that's where I went. And I had no idea that all the deacons and the preachers, they were all from that logging industry. And so they all coalesced around that space. And that was really a surprise to me, that I've been surrounded by it my whole life and didn't know my own history.
Well, we're all out of time, but if you can't get all the way out to Eastern Oregon, you can, maybe if you're here in Portland, attend the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center's series of interactive events at the World Forestry Center here in Portland, Oregon at 4033 Southwest Canyon Road. Those events are happening from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. every second Saturday, now through June 19th. You can find more information on Facebook, or you can also go to the Maxville Heritage website, which is www.maxvilleheritage.org. Gwen Trice, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.